We apologize for the audio difficulties in this episode of Ordinary Fellowship. However, we believe the content is worth the quality of audio being subpar. So again, please accept our sincerest apologies and enjoy this episode of Ordinary Fellowship.
Ordinary Fellowship is a podcast inspired by the Puritan practice of godly conference, or spiritual conversations among believers. These spiritual conversations will offer practical spiritual help for Christian living. I'm Jeremy Lee, and with me as always is my friend and co-host, Matthew McLaughlin. Are you ready for season two, Matthew?
Well, I guess we can say we're ready.
All right. This morning we are talking about the sanctity of human life. In January, I believe it's the third Sunday every January, churches recognize this day. It's a day where we can, based on the anniversary of Roe versus Wade, where we can think about and talk about things related to sanctity of human life, both to encourage one another to fight against ungodly laws that allow for the taking of human life, and also to encourage Christians to be involved in helping those who have been impacted by these unjust and ungodly laws. And so we want to take some time today to discuss sanctity of human life. And really, this isn't something that's at the edges of what Christianity is all about, but it's really at the heart of Christianity. And I think we see this very well in a passage in Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 16 says, "Again, the word of the Lord came to me, 'Son of man, make known to Jerusalem her abominations, and say, Thus says the Lord God to Jerusalem, Your origin and your birth are of the land of the Canaanites. Your father was an Amorite, and your mother a Hittite. And as for your birth, on the day you were born, your cord was not cut, nor were you washed with water to cleanse you, nor rubbed with salt, nor wrapped in swaddling cloths. No, I pitied you to do any of these things to you out of compassion for you, but you were cast out on the open field, for you were abhorred on the day that you were born. And when I passed by you and saw you wallowing in your blood, I said to you in your blood, live. I said to you in your blood, live. I made you flourish like a plant of the field, and you grew up and became tall and arrived at full adornment. Your breasts were formed and your hair had grown, yet you were naked and bare." This passage of Scripture makes God uses a metaphor of saving a child that was cast out and unwanted as a metaphor for the salvation of his people. So, as I said, this isn't something on the edge of what Christians think about and are concerned about, but it's really at the heart of Christianity. And we see that especially in that metaphor. In order to discuss sanctity of human life, we have a couple guests with us today, Matthew.
We do. We're glad to have our pastor back with us, Mac Williams. We also have a member of our congregation, Kirsten English, who want to add to the conversation we want to have about sanctity of human life. You've heard some things about Mac before, but Kirsten wants to tell a story to help us frame the conversation we're going to have.
I've actually been involved in Right to Life for many years. I became involved as a teenager. As far as I knew, my parents had always been pro-life, and they used me to respect and honor human life, but I found out shortly after I became involved in Right to Life that the reason that my parents were for life was that they had chosen abortions among my siblings, and they had been afraid that there was something wrong with the baby, because this was back in the 70s before there were common tests. But my father did work with chemicals that were known to cause birth defects, and my mom
People I miss the most because of not being able to come to church because of COVID is Micah. He usually was at the back door and gives everybody a bulletin and hugs you when you come in. I miss him a lot. Thank you for that story. It's really tell heartfelt and powerful. We do want to we'll talk more with Kirsten, but I mean, you're allowed to opine on these questions too, but we do want to talk a little bit about the biblical backgrounds, theological backgrounds of where we're coming from when we are talking about the sanctity of human life and opposing abortion. So I read the passage at the beginning that talks about God using the metaphor of rescuing his people as rescuing a child who's been left to die. Obviously, that speaks volumes, but where does the Bible specifically condemn abortion? In what way does the Bible, how is the Bible pro-life?
Well, personally, I would see it from a couple different angles. One is, in the very beginning, we know that God is the creator. and makes it very clear that God is the one who created men and women, human life, along with everything else. And so that's an important starting place, because if someone does not see creation as being valid, in other words, they see the world as evolving and so forth, and you really can't have the same value on human life if it's not something that God created himself and really stamped it with his own image. Man is made in the image of God. And so that really is, I think that has to be the starting place. And one of the things we can go to that where it talks about, I think, in more specifically, we could, some could say, well, yeah, of course he created Adam and Eve. But after that, people have been born, Everybody has a mom and dad. Adam and Eve didn't have their mothers and fathers, but everybody else does. But the Bible still says, for example, Psalm 100, it is he who has made us and not we ourselves. So God gets the credit, because he rightfully so, as being the one who created each one of us individually. Psalm 139 makes that even more specific. I don't know if somebody else is going to read this later, but this is one of the common texts that's spoken of in this regard, where he says, "You formed my inward parts." This is David speaking to the Lord. "You formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well." And there's more to say there, but David very clearly gives God the credit for weaving him together as a person while he was in his mother's womb, and that's true for all of us. The other aspect of it, of course, is the Bible says, one of the Ten Commandments is you shall not kill. And there is a specific law, and this is in Exodus 21. I probably should give another kind of background here. I believe that God's moral law, the Ten Commandments, are still things that we should abide by and are still held accountable to. A lot of people know that the Old Testament law is oftentimes divided into three categories: the moral law, the ceremonial law, and the civil law. Ceremonial law has to do with things related to the sacrifices, things that the priests did, things of that sort. Moral law is summed up in the Ten Commandments. Civil law are the specific laws that were given to Israel to govern itself as a nation. And so those civil laws are not specifically applicable to us, at least in the same way. But I think they're important to us as examples. And I believe those civil laws were actually outgrowths of the moral law and specific applications of that. So I say that to give this specific case law, which is in Exodus 21, 22 to 25. It says this, "If men struggle with each other and strike a woman with a child, so that she gives birth prematurely, yet there is no injury, he shall surely be fined as the woman's husband may demand of him, and he shall pay as the judges decide. But if there is further injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise." So basically, to sum up here, you have the idea of the potential of an accidental abortion. It talks about two men who are struggling, some sort of fight, something's going on. There's a woman with child nearby. She gets inadvertently brought into this and gets struck in some way. And it says if there's no injury to the child, then the man is still liable to for a fine for his part in endangering a pregnant woman. If the child dies, it's life for life. So therefore, he deserves the death penalty if he has caused, and even inadvertently, he has caused an abortion. And so, and that's what's interesting here is this is for an inadvertent abortion.
Right.
So there's really not a need to say, well, what about if they do it on purpose? Well, you can't get much more
right
than life for life.
Right.
You know, so I think those are the, as I think about how does the Bible specifically condemn abortion, that's the two places I go, two ways I look at it.
Right.
Very good. I think another issue is our culture's view of children. Sadly, I've been to churches where this seems the reality as well. You know, I have six children, and when people, and most Americans find that out, they're like, do you guys know how that happens? You figure that out? And sometimes it's a good-natured joke, but then some people are like, what is wrong with you people that you have so many children? And I've even... I get that attitude in church as well sometimes, not directed to me, but I've seen that. That seems to me to play into the whole culture's view of the view of children and their value. It seems really diminished. Like if they're convenient, then it's good. If it's inconvenient, then it's not.
Yes.
Do you think, does the Bible have anything to say about that, about how God views children generally?
Well, and you may have had this passage in mind because it speaks to what you said in more ways than one. But Psalm 127 says, behold, children are a gift of the Lord. A fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. So, I mean, you've got a quiver full. So that's a good thing. But he also says there at the beginning that any child is a gift from the Lord, is a blessing from the Lord. And so the Bible teaches that. I mean, children are blessings of the Lord. And then you think of all the different places where, there's such an emphasis on the right way to raise children. I'm always impressed in the book of Proverbs how often, and it's mostly Solomon speaking, but how often he says, my son, and then he gives the instruction. My son, here, and gives the instruction. On and on. I mean, there's just most of the book of Proverbs is written from the perspective of a parent teaching their child, which tells you how important it is, you know, that children be taught and instructed. And so Solomon gives a whole book on how to do that. And of course, again, taking from the law of God, children are supposed to obey their parents, and Ephesians 6 picks that up and talks about the importance of children obeying their parents, and also of parents treating their children right, you know, and raising them in the admonition and instruction of the Lord. And then another thing I think is just kind of the genealogies that show up really all through the Old Testament and some in the New Testament as well. And there's an emphasis there on, of course, the child, and then the father, and then the grandfather. And I mean, just all the way through, you've got family focus just implied through these genealogies, and just how important the birth of children is to these families. I want to mention one more thing before I go too far here, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning. I didn't know you were going to start off like you were with the passage from Ezekiel and talking about how integral that is, just the idea of birth and saving a child. Just how integral that is to the whole Christian faith. Well, just the idea of birth. We were talking about this in our Bible study, I guess it was last Wednesday. Just the idea of birth, not just the idea, the reality of birth. But we're supposed to be born again. John 3, Jesus is seeking to explain that to Nicodemus. What does it mean for someone's life to be changed, to be transformed? And he uses the imagery of birth And so the very fact that we are born, I mean, God didn't have to cause people to be coming into the world by birth. I mean, he didn't do that with Adam and Eve. He could have done it that way all the way through. But he chose birth. And I think birth not only is important to family, but birth also is an imagery of how someone comes into the kingdom of Christ. We are born again. I mean, you're not brought into the kingdom by physical birth, but that physical birth is an image of what it is to be spiritually born again. So it's all tied together.
And add to that, not only birth as a metaphor for what it means to be a Christian, but adoption is as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Good point. Absolutely.
And that's another metaphor to describe how we become part of the family of God.
Right.
And that, you know, obviously, if we're talking about sanctity of human life, adoption is a vital aspect of that as well. And it's really at the heart of Christianity.
Yeah.
We're not just picking up on some extreme issue, extraneous issue. This is at the heart of what Christianity is all about. So it's very, very central to the Christian faith.
Jeremy, can I just chime in?
Yes, you may.
When you're talking about the devaluing of children in our culture, another thing that happens, I think, is that women are devalued.
Yes.
And speaking as someone who's been a stay-at-home mom for over 20 years, my friends and I have stories of, you know, people saying, well, you're just wasting your education. You know, why did you go to college if you're going to be a stay-at-home mom? You know, or just the idea that if you're not out in the workplace earning money, what you're doing is less valuable. And so there's a tie between women and children,
right,
in the valuing of motherhood when children are valued.
Right. And that's an important thing to say, because the view of women and the view of children go together. A lot of people who are pro-choice would say that pro-lifers are not pro-women. But I see it as that we're both pro-child and pro-woman. We're not picking one over the other, when I think the other side is picking one over the other.
Well, and the other thing is, when someone makes the argument that pro-life is not pro-woman, the assumption that they're not saying, but that they believe, is that abortion is good for women. And so if you oppose abortion, then you're opposing women. But if you look at what women say and the things that happen to them following abortion, it's very clear that the idea that abortion is good for women doesn't have solid logical standing. We know that there are physical complications affecting her fertility, affecting her ability to carry a future pregnancy to term. There can even be complications from the abortion itself, causing hemorrhaging and other serious life issues. Women still die from abortion, even though it's legal. Women are still killed by that. It is a medical procedure, and there are dangers associated with it. There are also psychological dangers. We know that women who've had abortions are traumatized by it many times. They can engage in substance abuse, thoughts of suicide. Often the relationship that with the father is destroyed. That's very common after a woman has an abortion. And a lot of women are just haunted and have guilt and wish they could go back and do something different. And what's really sad is a lot of women, when they are faced with an unplanned pregnancy and they don't know what to do, are choosing abortion because they don't feel like they have any other options. They're afraid of losing their job. I had a friend who had an abortion because she was afraid of losing her job. They are told if they're teenagers, their parents take them to the abortion clinic. I have a friend That happened to her. Very often the man will threaten, if you don't have an abortion, I'm leaving. And so here we have people saying, well, if you're against abortion, you're against women. And we're saying, how can we be against women when abortion is so damaging to women? And so many women say, this isn't what I wanted, but I felt like there isn't any other way out. I've reached a point in my life where I really feel like abortion isn't for women. Abortion is for a culture who doesn't want to actually help women through a difficult time of their lives. It's an easy way for us to wash our hands and say, well, we gave you this option that's going to scar you for life, but, you know, we're pro-woman.
Almost every story that I've heard of somebody thinking about abortion involves a man pressuring them into it.
It's very common. It's very common. And doubly sad, the last time I read the statistic, and it was many years ago, something like 70% of relationships end after an abortion is chosen. So that, you know, if a woman has an abortion to save that relationship, she's actually almost guaranteeing that the relationship will end.
That's very troublesome to me.
Sorry, I get a little passionate about this.
I know, and it's one of the things that bothers me is, being a man, I love my children, and the way I see other men, not Christian men, but the way I see other men act about having children, it just absolutely disgusts me, and it's awful. So it's hard for me, from a man's perspective, to know that men are so heartless and cruel that they would pressure women into that. It's really pathetic.
Well, you know, in reality, it's easy to point fingers, but we're all selfish, you know, and as parents, we can all say, I've done things to my children, I've said things to my spouse that were not healthy, that were harmful. And so we can get angry at those men who pressure their wife or their girlfriend. We can get angry at the women who choose abortion. But in the end, they're just acting according to what they are driven by, whatever idols are in their lives, just like all of us are. And, you know, the sin of gossip is another sin that Jesus had to die for. James tells us, if we break the law in one part, we've broken all of it. So it's just very important that we remember that we all need God's grace.
Yeah. Thank you for that reminder. one of the stereotypes is pro-lifers aren't pro-woman, but another stereotype is things that I've heard people who are pro-choice say are that pro-lifers are just pro-birth. They just want to have the baby, but after that, then too bad. And usually it involves things like health care from the government and welfare, food stamps, and things like that, because conservatives tend to not be for those things. How do we avoid this stereotype? That's not necessarily for you, Kirsten, whoever wants to answer.
I think one of the ways, and I think Kirsten could say a lot to this, is the crisis pregnancy centers that are really just all over the nation. I'm assuming worldwide, but I know at least within our nation, that's a very strong movement that you know, all that I'm aware of are all driven by and led by Christians, and yes, they really want to encourage the woman to have the baby and do what they can, you know, to encourage them along that line. But they also do other things, you know, try to help provide very tangible kind of things like clothing, diapers. A lot of them have training classes and so forth. And I think that's a really, it's probably an under-advertised option, ministry that is there. But I think that's a very good and important ministry that I think is tied into supporting women in that, where it's beyond just the birth aspect.
I honestly, my whole life I've known women who have been involved in the crisis pregnancy centers here in our area. It's the Women's Center, Miami Valley Women's Center. And yes, they are all about not just providing material needs, diapers, formula, car seats, clothing, but they're also about providing support, parenting support, and teaching young parents who find themselves suddenly in a situation they weren't expecting how to be a good parent. I used to assist with a program in our area called Toddlers of Teens, and for the young women to be involved, they had to have had a baby as a teenager, and that baby is now a toddler. And they paired us with them, and we went through a series of classes together, and then it was a mentoring relationship. And just things that, you know, as a parent, you know, your toddler is not being bad when she empties the cabinets onto the floor, or she takes your keys out of your purse and puts them where she thinks they need to be. You know, those things are frustrating, but sometimes young parents need to be taught your child isn't being bad. She's not being disobedient. This is normal. So there really is a sense not just of providing material needs out of the pro-life community, but a continuing relationship. And I know of no pro-choice organizations who are kind of in it for the long haul, like the crisis pregnancy centers are. By the way, I actually looked this up before I came, and we can link to it on the Facebook site. Abby Johnson is a former abortion clinic supervisor. And if you have not read her book, Unplanned, it is an excellent book. But she recently did a series on myth busting. And this exact myth is myth number 7, that pro-lifers only care about babies in the womb. And you will tell when you watch the video, she has a bit of a sarcastic flair. But she answers it very well, and just showing that her abortion clinic was not interested in helping women beyond providing abortion in their sense of the word help, whereas it's the pregnancy centers that are really stepping up and helping.
And they also help in the case where you want to give the child up for adoption. Yes. As well, correct?
Yes, they do. Actually, I have a cousin who did that. She had an unplanned pregnancy in college and was helped by a pro-life center near her. She had planned originally to give the child up for adoption, but then circumstances with the father's family caused her to actually keep the baby. And then they switched gears from helping her with the adoption to helping her do what she needed to do to keep the baby. And something else that's very important is the pregnancy centers, everyone that I have ever known of, also provide help for post-abortive women. So if a woman has had an abortion and she is struggling with thoughts of suicide or nightmares or substance abuse or just relationships, and she feels like she needs to talk to someone, she should contact her local crisis pregnancy center. There are people there who have been trained in counseling. Many of them are post-abortive themselves, so they will know what she's going through and they can help her. So as we're talking about mental health awareness more and more in our culture, especially this year, definitely I would encourage women who are suffering to reach out.
Right. Now, so that leads one issue that I think is really important is it's one thing to talk about abortion when it's someone gets pregnant because they didn't take precautions or made a mistake. It's another thing when it comes to talking about rape. I'm guessing that everybody in this room isn't for abortion, even in those cases. How can we be more sensitive to this issue with in regards to rape? There's someone that I know who was raped, and her comment was there was no pro-life Christians at the women's shelter, the battered women's shelter that she had to go to afterwards. But how can we be more involved? How can we help in this issue? Any thoughts on that? I know it's a difficult one.
I think it starts with what we've already talked about a little bit, and that is we have to evaluate how we view women, and then we have to evaluate what we've talked about in other episodes, how we view suffering, and how we view pain, and how we view evil. And I think far too often we were guilty of the same thing the disciples were guilty of, and we tie the rape into some form of sin. Somehow, she did something, and so this happened.
Right.
And the reality is, that's not true, and it's wrong, and we should push it as far out of our mind as humanly possible. But yet, we become guilty of stereotyping. And so we believe the stereotype, and that stereotype clouds our ability to do what we should do, what we know is right. But we stereotype her, and then we allow ourselves to be stereotyped. We say, if we reach out, how am I then going to be viewed? And it goes back to a broader conversation that we've kind of been having in our Sunday school about the whole idea of fear of man and how we allow shame and regret shape how we interact with the world. But on a fundamental level, what we need to do is to be sensitive, is to understand that evil has occurred. We don't want to compound that evil by then refusing to do what we need to do. And therefore, we need to approach that woman who has suffered that trauma and not allow her to perpetrate the evil further by compounding the sin, and for the sin not to be compounded upon her. Right? Therefore, we need to reach out and help and walk through the difficult water that's in front. And that's the other piece. You have to acknowledge that. We can't sugarcoat it. It's difficult, heavy, deep water.
And this is, I think, one example of how you can't just be pro-birth or pro-child. You have to be pro-woman and pro-child.
Very much so.
I just kind of like to chime in, and please feel free to correct me if I'm theologically wrong in this. But I'm putting myself in this situation. How would I react if a woman came to me and said, I have been raped and now I'm pregnant? And I think about Job and how what he really needed were his friends to just sit with him. And so I think that's where I would start. I would start by just sitting with her and listening. And I would share with her the information that I know about the damage that abortion causes to women, even women who've been raped. There's damage caused by abortion. But ultimately, I am not responsible for her choice. I am only responsible for being a faithful friend and witness to her. So I can come alongside her and walk with her and offer her support. I mean, even to the point of offering to adopt her baby if need be. But if she in the end chooses abortion, that's her choice. My responsibility is to continue to love her, to continue to support her, and to continue to walk with her. Like Matthew said, it's messy. it's hard. I don't think we sin if we just walk alongside someone and they choose to sin. And we can continue to walk alongside them and love them and be there for them. Most likely that woman will eventually need someone to talk to. And in those years that follow, I would have shown my concern for her and my love for her.
I think to pair on top of that, one of the primary principles that I was taught in counseling is this. I have to understand someone. I don't have to accept it. I don't have to condone it, but I have to understand it. And I think far too often we don't bring ourselves to the place where we understand what's actually happening, and we just try to throw out advice. When what we need to do is what Kristen said. It's always mesmerized me when you stop and think about Job's friends. They sat there for 7 days, and they didn't say a word. And we need to practice that. We need to understand how and why they feel and think the way they do. And then, as the opportunity arises, speak truth into their life. But you can't speak truth into their life. You can speak the truth, but it's going to hit a brick wall if they don't think that you care about them before you speak the truth. And that's why, that's one of the most important things I think we can do.
We want to thank our guests, Pastor Mac and Kirsten, for joining us for this special episode of Ordinary Fellowship. For more information or resources on how you can help in the local area, visit Miami Valley Women's Center at miamivalleywomenscenter.org. But for now, we thank you for listening to this episode of Ordinary Fellowship, a ministry of Two Rivers Community Church. For more information about Two Rivers, you can find us at www.tworiverscc.org. We look forward to your comments, your questions, and even that dreaded hate mail at ordinaryfellowship@gmail.com. And please follow us on Facebook at Ordinary Fellowship. But for now, we thank you for listening to this episode of Ordinary Fellowship, where we strive to have spiritual conversations for practical Christian living.